Chapter 13. Stepping into the Unknown. In April 1883, the soldiers at Fort Apache, Arizona, were astonished when a lone traveler on a mule rode up to the gate. The Apache were on the warpath, and that made travel very difficult. The rider was Swiss-born Adolf Francis Alphonse Bandelier, 1840-1914. Who was wandering through the remote Indian territories of the desert, studying the ruined cities of the people who had lived there long before Columbus. Bandelier was traveling through the virtually unknown American Southwest. A few Spanish-led expeditions from Mexico had visited Hopi and Zuni Pueblo Indian villages in search of gold, but they had left empty-handed. There had been tales of crowded, multi-story Indian settlements, commonly called pueblos, but there were few details. The first lengthy description of the ancient pueblos came in 1849 when U.S. Army Lieutenant James Henry Simpson and artist Richard Kern visited 10 ancient pueblos, including the great ruins at Pueblo Bonito in Chaco Canyon, New Mexico, and the Navajo pueblos in Canyon de Chelly in northeastern Arizona. The number of outside visitors to the region increased dramatically after the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad in 1869, as ever more settlers moved westward. The U.S. government organized official expeditions to map and explore what was essentially a huge environmental laboratory. Their tasks included studying the geology of the area and gathering knowledge about the Pueblo Indians and their settlements. Most government expeditions were more concerned with geology and potential mining opportunities than with Indian pueblos. Adolf Bandelier, on his humble mule, had quite different interests. A small-town banker in upstate New York, then a coal mine manager, the quiet and scholarly Bandelier used his spare time to study Spanish records of Mexico and the Southwest at a time of public fascination with the American West. A skilled linguist, he scoured little-known archives, but learned virtually nothing about Pueblo Indian history. His hobby became an obsession, and he soon realized that he needed to extend his library-based research by going into the field in the Southwest. Bandelier dropped everything to travel to Santa Fe, New Mexico, with only a small grant to his name. Though almost penniless and with few possessions beyond his mule, at least he could now study Pueblo Indian archaeology and history in situ. Bandelier knew that any investigation of the past would start with existing Pueblo Indian communities. He stopped first at the recently abandoned Pecos Pueblo in New Mexico. As late as the 17th century, as many as 2,000 people had lived at Pecos. The last of them had left by the 1830s, 50 years before Bandelier arrived. Having mastered the local language in an astonishing 10 days, he collected vital historical information from elderly residents. He also described and surveyed the ruins of the large pueblo, but did not excavate. He had neither the knowledge nor the money to do so. His Pecos research convinced him that the only way to study earlier Pueblo history was by working backwards from living societies into the distant past using archaeology. Bandelier wrote a detailed report on his Pecos research, but it attracted little attention. He now searched for other promising sites. In late 1880, he spent 3 months living with the inhabitants of Cochetti Pueblo. New Mexico's Catholic priests helped him extensively in contacting Indian informants, especially after he converted to Catholicism. The pueblos that Bandelier visited consisted of closely packed adobe, or mud rooms, connected to one another by a maze of entrances and narrow passageways. Some of the larger pueblos had two stories, or even more, like the great semicircular multi-story Pueblo Bonito in Chaco Canyon. Large, circular, underground chambers were to be found in the open center of the semicircular structure. These kivas were places where secret ceremonies were held. Seemingly ramshackle and somewhat untidy, the pueblos were in fact highly organized communities where extended families had lived for generations. From 1881 to 1892, Bandelier wandered across Arizona and New Mexico. Though he made extensive notes during his travels, he didn't live to see them in print. They were finally published in the 1960s and 1970s. They contain information of great archaeological and historical importance. Strictly speaking, Bandelier was not an archaeologist, but he was in all but name. He never drove a spade into an archaeological site. Instead, with his plans and site descriptions, he laid the groundwork for later researchers' excavations. Bandelier approached the history of the Pueblo Indians using written sources and oral traditions, as well as his own observations. He was the first American archaeologist to use his observations of living Indian tribes to interpret the past. He regarded archaeology as a study not of objects, but of the history and information that the finds supplied. He tracked back from the present to ancient times, using everything from Indian pot designs to local histories passed from generation to generation. As he put it, he worked from the known to the unknown, step by step. Bandelier's remarkable fieldwork formed the foundations for the pioneering archaeological work that was to come a generation later. All those who followed in his footsteps worked from the present back into the past, as Southwest archaeology does to this day. Bandelier supported his wanderings by writing a Catholic history, magazine articles, and even a novel, The Delight Makers, set in prehistoric times. His object in doing so was more than just to make money, although that would have been welcome. He wanted to share Southwest Indian history with a broader public. The novel was not a commercial success, but it was striking for its insights into Indian society. Bandelier left the Southwest in 1892 and spent the rest of his life working in Mexico, South America, and Spain. Unlike archaeology in many other parts of the world, which began with large-scale digging, the Southwest's past began with Bandelier's careful studies of living societies and historic pueblos. He realized that to succeed, archaeologists would have to work back through the centuries by digging into pueblo garbage heaps with their thousands of broken pot fragments. He could not do so himself, and so he contented himself with maps, surveys, and talking to living Pueblo Indians. There was another problem, too. Many of the most promising pueblos for archaeology were still occupied, which made digging impossible. Alongside Bandelier was another visitor who helped lay the basis for later excavations, a remarkable anthropologist who lived among the Zuni Indians and acquired an insider's knowledge of their society. Frank Hamilton Cushing, 1857 to 1900, was the son of a physician. A smooth-talking scholar, he liked drama and had a taste for carefully managed publicity. In 1875, Cushing was appointed assistant in ethnology, the study of non-Western peoples, at the Smithsonian Institution, where he learned of the Pueblo Indians of New Mexico. In late 1879, Cushing accompanied U.S. Army Colonel James Stevenson on a Smithsonian expedition to the Southwest. Cushing arrived at Zuni Pueblo as the September sun was setting behind the village. He described the densely inhabited pueblo as a little island of mesas, flat-topped hills, one upon another. He was supposed to stay for just 3 months. Instead, he remained for 4.5 years, after which time he left to attend to his neglected duties in Washington. Cushing stayed behind after Stevenson and his companions moved on. Even after a few days, he was aware that his work had hardly begun. Bandelier had wandered freely across the Southwest, collecting information and identifying abandoned pueblos. But Cushing took a totally different approach. He realized that a true understanding of the Zuni could only be achieved by living among them, mastering their language, and recording their lives in detail. Today, anthropologists call this participant observation. but it was a novel idea in Cushing's time. Cushing was not an archaeologist, but he was aware that Zuni culture extended far back into the past, and he knew that his research provided a baseline for studying much earlier history. At first, the Indians threatened to kill him when he tried to record their dances. But his calm response made a deep impression on them, and he was never harassed again. The Zuni allowed him to study the structure of their society, and he was even initiated into their secret priesthood of the bow. Cushing had his ears pierced, and he dressed in Indian clothes. Eventually, the Zunis came to trust him enough to appoint him a war chief. Next to his numerous transcriptions of Zuni folk tales and myths, he recorded his own title, First War Chief of Zuni, U.S. Assistant Ethnologist. Cushing became a passionate supporter of the Zuni and did much to protect their lands against European settlers. But he upset some powerful people in Washington who had their eyes on land in the area, and he was recalled. Despite ill health, he lectured widely on his experiences and wrote about them for popular audiences. Frank Cushing's strong personal magnetism and his public speaking skills did much to heighten public interest in the Southwest. His books and lectures presented a romantic vision of Pueblo life that was often far from reality. Nevertheless, his accounts of Zuni oral traditions and ceremonies are of lasting value, even today. Cushing would be the first to admit that he was no archaeologist, but he considered archaeology a way of carrying his research on living people back into early centuries. Excavation, he knew, was the way to work from modern times into the past. On a later brief expedition to the Southwest, he did excavate a cemetery in Arizona's Salt River Valley. A powerful earthquake had destroyed a nearby pueblo, which he also investigated. But his Southwestern researches were over by 1890. Bandelier and Cushing showed the potential for serious excavation. Dry conditions in caves and pueblos preserved ancient baskets, painted pots, woven sleeping mats, and even dried-out human burials. Many of these finds trickled back to America's East Coast and fetched high prices. Inevitably, pot hunters and antiques dealers moved in on the pueblos. Richard Witherell, a Colorado rancher turned trader and artifact collector, was one of those who indulged in treasure hunting, acquiring painted pottery and other artifacts from dozens of archaeological sites. In 1888, Witherell and another rancher, Charlie Mason, were looking for stray cattle in the canyons of Mesa Verde in southern Colorado when they came across a large pueblo set in a cave, the largest cliff dwelling in North America. Now known as the Cliff Palace, the pueblo was built of sandstone with mortar made of soil, water, and ash to hold the stone blocks together. About 100 people dwelt in the Cliff Palace between AD 1190 and 1260, before it was abandoned, perhaps following a long period of drought. This was an important administrative and ceremonial center, with 23 sunken kivas. Mesa Verde and other sites in the region became a gold mine for Richard Witherell's family. His last years found him at Pueblo Bonito in Chaco Canyon. In 1897, he opened a store near the site selling artifacts and provisions. By 1900, he had cleared more than 190 rooms, over half the site, and had sold their contents. His excavations were sponsored to the tune of at least $25,000 by private individuals who gave the finds to the American Museum of Natural History in New York. After rumors of huge profits reached Washington, Witherell's excavations were suspended by official order. In 1907, he signed over ownership of the land to the government. Meanwhile, the few professional archaeologists in the Southwest, led by Edgar Hewitt, 1865 to 1946, a disciple of Adolph Bandelier, lobbied successfully for some laws to protect archaeological sites on public land. The American Antiquities Act of 1906 offered limited protection to key areas like Chaco Canyon and Mesa Verde. Hewitt started a field school to train young archaeologists in proper excavation methods, not those used by pot hunters. Much of the work involved cleaning up sites damaged by looters. Bandelier, Cushing, and others established a basic principle about the Southwest. You need to work backwards from the present into the past. Archaeologists have followed this principle ever since.